Hey there, rooster. So this is the rooster that we rescued. Hey there. I guess his name is Chuck, we were told. Aren't you beautiful there, Chuck? How you doing? He's known to attack people. Oh, he's taking a dump. Thank you, Chuck. What you up to there, Chuck? He has been known to attack people. Hopefully he won't do this at the moment. Let's see if we can get in. Look at his plumage. Look at that. That's really something. Look at that. Beautiful tail. Beautiful colors. Yeah, scratching for food. He's really something. Anyway, he's doing great out here on the Health Ranger Ranch. And look, the hens like him too. So, yeah, he's been very popular. All right, see you later, Chuck.
All right, welcome to Brighton Broadcast News from Monday, March 4th, 2024. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. I did have an emergency broadcast over the weekend that I strongly encourage you to go back and review if you haven't seen it yet or listened to it. It's from March 2nd. Red alert update. Gold surges. Germany caught plotting World War III false flag operation to pull the USA into a nuclear war with Russia. And that story has been exploding over the weekend as Germany now acknowledges that the secret recordings of their military leaders, the recording that the Russians got their hands on, it's authentic. It's all real. And yes, the German military leaders were discussing over an unsecure line, maybe on Zoom or something, who knows, how to bomb the Crimean Bridge using, I think, these Taurus missiles? Is that what it is? Anyway, check out that podcast if you haven't heard it yet. It's a very important one. Now, today, it's going to be a relatively short podcast. And although there's some big news that I will cover here. But I spent most of the weekend working on the AI project and making major, major breakthroughs on our AI. But I also have a special report for you here about how AI is going to be weaponized against you. So AI is going to be the most formidable and terrible weapon to enslave or control or silence human beings. But it can also be a tool for liberty in the hands of people who operate with morals and ethics like we do. And I think like you do. And remember my slogan here. We are building the infrastructure of human freedom. That's my job as the Health Ranger, Mike Adams. I'm building the infrastructure of human freedom, and I'm doing it with honesty, ethics, morality, and truth. And this AI project that we're building is a very important component in that, and we are now less than a month away, hopefully, from having it in your hands. Now, don't forget to sign up at brighteon.ai if you want to be alerted via email when we have that available. But let me cover some of the big news here, and then we'll get into the interview. Well, first I'll play the special report about AI, and then the interview today is with John Rubino, who is, of course, the founder of DollarCollapse.com, and he's got some serious warnings for us about what's about to happen with the economy. In other news, the rumor is that SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, is supposed to rule today on Colorado trying to remove Trump from the ballot. As you know, Illinois recently removed Trump from the ballot. And now there are, I think, three states in total that have attempted to do this because that's how much Democrats hate democracy. They say, we won't let you vote for anyone that we don't like. And that's how we're going to protect democracy, is by destroying it. That's the way that Democrats operate. So SCOTUS is going to rule on this. It's almost certain that they're going to rule that states cannot use the 14th Amendment to just out of the blue make a decision to remove Trump from the ballot. That's not democracy. That's not the power that one person should have to control the election outcome for the entire country. It's insane. It's absurd. But if the Supreme Court does rule that this is okay to do, then guess what's going to happen? You're going to see probably 25 red states then ruling that Democrats can't appear on the ballot. And if it's state versus state, then guess what? Trump wins, because there are more states that support Trump than states that support Biden. So, you know, the Democrats want to play it that way. Well, Trump can win the White House with states alone, just state votes. And there's actually a constitutional mechanism for that in case one candidate does not reach the required number of electoral votes. And I think that's 273, but I do need to double check that. Now, Trump over the weekend said something really important, and this was covered by yournews.com. Trump blasts Biden's immigration policies as a threat to U.S. sovereignty, saying that Biden is engaged in a conspiracy to overthrow the United States. This is very serious language, and it's absolutely correct. So Trump said that Biden's border policies are a conspiracy to overthrow the United States. He said that the policies are designed to collapse the American system and to nullify the will of the actual American voters. He furthermore said that Biden is providing, quote, aid and comfort to foreign enemies of the United States. Now, wow, this is very serious language. This is the kind of language that is used before someone is arrested and charged with treason. And maybe that's what's coming for Biden and the Democrats. And I think they all should be charged with treason, by the way. They should be charged with the crimes that they're engaged in right now to try to overrun and overthrow the United States of America. It is a conspiracy to overthrow the United States of America. So the fact that Trump is using this language, it seems to me like it's a signal to other groups who maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say that there's a like a military coup or anything like that, because the Pentagon is all woke and controlled by the globalists at this point. But it sounds like Trump is sort of signaling somebody. I don't know who, but maybe there's somebody out there that has the power to arrest Joe Biden somehow. I honestly don't know, but I've never heard Trump speak like that. But it seems that if Trump is elected president, given that he has said these things, it would be almost impossible for Trump not to call for the arrest or to even demand the arrest of the current treasonous actors who are in charge. All right, now let's move over to the UK here. And this story comes from Information Liberation. Right-wing British activist Sam Malaya sentenced to 2 years in prison over anti-immigration stickers. He was sentenced to 2 years in prison. What was the charge? Oh, intending to stir up racial hatred. And he did so by saying that white people will be a minority in our homeland by the year 2066. He sounds like an optimist. I think that white people will be a minority in the UK in about 2030, I would say. I mean, it's happening so fast. Basically, this guy said that white lives matter, which apparently no one is allowed to utter that phrase. You can't say white lives matter. You can say black lives matter. You can say Jewish lives matter. You can say trans lives matter. Oh, you can't say white lives matter. Oh my God. No, that's one of the worst crimes of our woke system right now. But he also said that basically white people are being replaced in Europe, which is exactly what's happening. White people are being replaced. But the thing is, it's not just white people. Okay. It's also like black British, right? Dark skin color British people are being replaced by non-British people. So it's not really a white thing, actually. It's a British thing. And in America, it's an American thing. So black Americans are being replaced by the new wave of illegals just as rapidly as white Americans, or frankly, same thing as Native Americans. Everybody's being replaced by the new wave of migrants. So yes, the replacements are on their way. I mean, they're here. What am I saying? But more are on the way. And this is all happening on purpose. So you can be thrown in prison for sharing a meme, essentially, in the UK. That is unbelievable. So let's see. The sentencing guidelines were between 2 years and 6 years. So he got the minimum. Only 2 years. I mean, my God. Only 2 years. Wow. 2 years in prison? The government can take away your life, your freedom for 2 years? For sharing a sticker. That's in the UK, which does not have a First Amendment. This is unbelievable. This shows you the complete tyranny of Western civilization. This is why the UK and many Western countries are now seen by everybody in the world, including their own citizens, as complete evil, absolute runaway tyranny, authoritarianism. You can't criticize migrants in this environment. You mean the same migrants that are going to destroy New York City, according to the mayor of New York City? You're not allowed to talk about the violent crimes carried out by the migrants that are murdering people, like that recent murder in Georgia from an illegal, and of course the media covers it up, they never talk about it. You're not allowed to talk about any of this stuff. It's unbelievable. There's all kinds of things you're not allowed to talk about. For example, you're not allowed to talk about how bad the anti-police policies are. But here's a story out of the Post-Millennial. Austin Police Department in crisis amid shortages and defund the police measures. So Michael Bullock, president of the Austin Police Association, told Fox News that the city of Austin, Texas, is on the brink of disaster. He says that the city leadership and city councils have basically blocked their funding to hire officers. I mean, of course, yeah, it's all on purpose because, you know, policing is racist, according to the radical left. So Bullock says, quote, twice now we've had our contract voted down or it has been allowed to expire. Each year since 2017, we've lost more officers than we've hired. We've had to gut our specialized units and force detectives to work backfill on patrol just to try and respond to 911 calls, right? You got that? So the detectives who are supposed to be investigating, you know, homicides and drug trafficking and what have you, they're getting in patrol cars and responding to 911 calls because there's not enough cops. Unbelievable. From the story, Austin resident Lauren Kleinfelter slammed the longer 911 response times and told the network that after she had been involved in a significant car accident in 2022 with her two young children, ages 8 and 2, she couldn't even get through to a dispatcher. Quote, we needed an ambulance and some emergency assistance because not only was my car totaled, but my children were both bleeding and visibly injured. I called 911 and to my surprise, it rang and rang endlessly, only to be routed to a 311 operator for non-emergencies. My children were bleeding and over an hour had passed, so with no other option, we got a lift to the hospital and back home. The police never showed up. I was never contacted by anyone to follow up on the incident. Folks, you are on your own in these blue cities. You are on your own. By the way, would you let your children bleed for an hour and just wait for the cops? I mean, I understand she finally got a lift to the hospital, but I hope that in the meantime, she was stopping the bleeding. I don't know. Maybe I've taken too many, you know, blood stop courses or something, but if I see somebody bleeding, I'm like, stop, let's stop that blood, you know, tourniquets, pressure, you know, blood stop gauze, whatever it takes, man. Here, put your hand here, push hard, hold pressure, or, you know, here, put on this tourniquet, and yes, it's going to hurt, and write the time on it. Boom. So emergency services knows how long you have before your arm falls off, right? That kind of thing. How do people not know these skills? I'm not criticizing this mother, by the way. Maybe she did stop the bleeding and then she waited. But you understand that in the blue cities, they are gutting the police. They are gutting emergency services. They're doing it all on purpose. And they're releasing more violent criminals onto the streets in order to create chaos, in order to create violent crime. This is Operation Chaos. This is how George Soros has caused other nations to collapse so that he can make billions of dollars on the currency play. Somebody is betting big time against the U.S. currency while buying a bunch of gold and Bitcoin, it seems, at the same time. Billions have been poured into Bitcoin recently. And you can bet there are tens of billions of dollars of puts on the US dollar. And when the US collapses, somebody, some globalist, maybe with the initials GS, is going to make a freaking fortune and then use that fortune, weaponize it against all of us to fund all the campaigns of all the traitors and fascists and Satanists. And oh my God, guess what? That's what's been happening. That's actually the plan that you've been living under. They're just repeating it. So don't put your life on the line in a blue city hoping that police are going to show up. It's not the police's fault. They're overburdened like crazy. They can't respond. 911 won't even answer the phone in Austin. Won't even answer the phone. So how do you think this is going to go, by the way, when it all hits the fan? How do you think this is going to go? You're on your own. You better lock and load at that point. You better have, you know, a ballistic vest. You better have, well, it's better just not be there. Just don't be in a blue city at that moment. But you better have some defensive training and defensive tools and so on, because the cities will be absolute death traps, just like I said. The bottom line on that, folks, is you need to be ready to take care of yourself and your family, your local community, because this country is being dismantled on purpose, overrun on purpose. I mean, Trump was right. This is a conspiracy to overrun and destroy, overthrow the United States of America. And it's a conspiracy that's being pushed by nearly every Democrat out there. They think they're going to benefit from this, when the truth is that they're just burning down their country. It's just incredible. Okay. One more very important news item. Now, you may not know this, but in the National Defense Authorization Act, the NDAA from 2021, there was a little known provision that was called the Corporate Transparency Act, or the CTA. It was only 21 pages out of the 1,500 pages that is the NDAA. And what it means is that every small business, only small businesses, not large businesses, but small businesses under $5 million in revenue and under 20 employees are required to report all kinds of details about the principals of those small businesses to a division of the Treasury called FinCEN, which is all about anti-money laundering and financial crimes. That's essentially what it covers. And the deadline is the end of this calendar year. You're supposed to give them a copy of your driver's license or ID. You have to give them your social security number, your home address, you know, all these details for FinCEN. Now, they say that FinCEN, which is spelled F-I-N-C-E-N, stands for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. I happen to know it actually stands for financial censorship. Fin for finance and CEN for censorship. This is all about gathering up all the information on people all across America so that the government will know which small business entities or holding companies, corporations, LLCs are owned by specific people that they want to target, because those people are dissenting against government narratives. And, you know, maybe they're Trump supporters. Maybe they are Christians. Maybe they're gun owners. Maybe they're just people that the government wants to harass financially. So that's what FinCEN is all about, financial censorship, to make sure that you can't function, or to spontaneously create audits, IRS audits, or, you know, other financial crimes audits or accusations against you. Now, what's astonishing about this law is that it only affects small business, not large businesses. And guess who's exempt? Banks are exempt. Yes, banks. Banks like JP Morgan. Banks that engage in the money laundering. The financial crimes of the world are carried out by the banks. Manipulation of markets, manipulation of gold and silver markets. How many billions of dollars has JP Morgan paid in fines for silver manipulation? It's a kind of money laundering. It's a kind of financial crime, but they are exempt. Guess who else is exempt? Venture capital firms. Yeah, that are also laundering money into more technology, such as AI projects that will enslave humanity. And guess who else is exempt? Oh, accounting firms. The accounting firms that run the money laundering for the banks and for the VC firms. It just goes on. There's a long list of who's exempt. Government departments are exempt. Nonprofits are exempt. But you're not exempt if you're a small business in America. So the National Small Business Association, which I really encourage you to join if you have a small business, it's at nsba.biz. It's the National Small Business Association, okay? nsba.biz. You should think about joining them. They filed suit. They filed suit, I think it was a year ago or so. And just this last Friday, a major decision was handed down by the United States District Court, Northern District of Alabama. And the lawsuit, by the way, is the National Small Business United, or the National Small Business Association, those are the plaintiffs, versus Janet Yellen in her official capacity as Secretary of the Treasury and whoever else is part of the Treasury, okay? So this is the NSBA suing Yellen and the Treasury. The judge dropped a major ruling that is astonishing on Friday, basically issuing a massive injunction against the enforcement of the Corporate Transparency Act until other courts can look at it, perhaps the Supreme Court. The ruling says that the mandatory disclosure requirements that are demanded by the CTA violate the First Amendment, the Fourth, Fifth, Ninth, and Tenth Amendments. That's a lot of violations. So the fact that this injunction has been issued means that it really needs to go back to Congress, probably, to rewrite the legislation, to try to, you know, adhere to the Constitution, if that's even possible. This is blatantly unconstitutional. If you failed to report all your details to FinCEN, you could go to jail for 2 years and have $500 a day fine or a civil penalty, plus a $250,000 fine. And if you have knowing and unauthorized disclosure or use of this information, can result in 5 years in federal prison. So understand, this is the federal government trying to spy on and surveil every last American who runs a small business. You know, the local restaurant owner, the local gym owner, the local hair salon owner, even businesses like ours fall under this. And if it wasn't for the NSBA, the National Small Business Association, this law would have gone into effect. And you would find yourself living under absolute tyranny, where you are required to turn over every scrap of personal information to another federal agency, where it would bypass any privacy you have in states that have sort of, you know, good privacy protections for LLCs or corporations or limited partnerships. You know, many states are well known for that, like a Delaware corporation, you've heard of that, or a Wyoming corporation. Other states have different privacy laws. All of that would have been bypassed. The federal government would have thrown you in jail if you didn't provide all the details of every small business entity. So goodbye privacy. But understand, this is what's happening to our tyrannical government regime right now. They're weaponizing everything against the everyday Americans. Notice that this law, the CTA, did not apply to large businesses. It did not apply to banks. It did not apply to government. Only applied to you. And you notice how with each increasing day in America, if you run a small business, that it's like the entire system is weaponized against you. Every day the government tries to figure out another way to crush you. Every single day, to tax you, to fine you, to regulate you, to put you out of business, to silence you. The government has become the enemy of freedom and the enemy of the Constitution. That's what this court ruled in Alabama. A federal district court in Alabama essentially ruled that the government has become the enemy of the U.S. Constitution. And it's hard to disagree with that. We are living in some very dark times, folks. Very dark times. Speaking of how twisted and evil our world has become, I want to play for you a little snippet of video of Larry C. Johnson, former CIA intel analyst, who is being interviewed by Dialogue Works founder Nima Al-Khorshid. I may not pronounce his name correctly. I apologize. But the channel is called Dialogue Works. And I found this channel to be really informative. A lot of great interviews there about Russia, Ukraine, the Middle East, what's happening in the world. So it's a good channel to check out, by the way. Well, Larry Johnson, former CIA analyst, he, like many Americans, is watching what's happening right now in the Middle East and watching the just insane cruelty that is being demonstrated by Israel as it slaughters tens of thousands of Palestinians, just bombs them to death or shoots them and now starving them, and all while claiming that it's not doing that, all while the U.S. keeps shipping more bombs and providing military cover and diplomatic cover. The U.S. vetoes all the U.N. resolutions that call for a ceasefire, by the way. So Larry C. Johnson has something really important to say about Israel, and it struck me as something that needed to be said, and he says it quite clearly, so I want you to hear it from his mouth. Again, former CIA intel analyst, okay? Listen to what he has to say about Israel.
Let me put it this way. If there is a God, if you believe that there is a God that provides eternal judgment on people for their actions, the Israelis will be condemned to the fires of hell for what they've done. There's no source of pride in this execution of Palestinian women and children. There is no glory in that. They have dishonored themselves as a country. They've really called into question whether or not they even deserve to exist anymore as a nation, because they've demonstrated a complete disregard for humanity and have engaged in dehumanizing conduct.
Wow. Powerful, profound. And I think that more and more people are coming to the same realization. You notice that Larry C. Johnson said that he is wondering whether Israel deserves to exist as a nation because it has abandoned the basic civility that should be required to exist as a nation on this planet. And basic human rights, basic rule of law, basic compassion, basic humanitarian principles. Israel has abandoned all of those things. And as Larry Johnson says, the Israelis, for putting up with this, for promoting it, and he's probably not referring to every single Israeli, he's referring to those who are pushing this, which perhaps is the majority, but he says those people will burn in hell. And it is, in fact, very difficult to see how God could be looking upon these actions and saying, you know, yes, I support you. Really? How on earth could God support this genocide, this slaughter, this torture, this suffering? This is the antithesis of God. What Israel is doing, the Zionists in particular, is not worshiping God. It's not honoring God. It's honoring Satanism. It's honoring Lucifer. It's honoring pain and death and suffering. Have no illusions. And anybody out there saying, well, Israel's chosen by God, they can do anything they want. You are speaking with the tongue of Satan if you say such a thing. God never chose anybody to carry out such evil against innocent women and children. That is not godly. That is not Christ-like. That is not something that our Lord would ever do. And every pastor, every Christian Zionist pastor in America that's calling for more genocide against the Palestinians, that pastor is going to burn in hell. Just like Larry Johnson said, they will burn in the fiery flames of hell for eternity for what they have done, and the judgment of God will be the wrath set upon them. Have no illusions. All right, now, speaking of Satanism, some people believe that AI systems are infested with demons. And Steve Quayle, in particular, has mentioned this to me several times during interviews. And perhaps there are some evil satanic corporations that are somehow summoning demons to infest their AI systems. I can tell you that our AI system doesn't have demons in it. Because we're building it for humanity, for knowledge and empowerment, enlightenment, true knowledge. But the corporations are building systems to enslave and destroy humanity. And so I've recorded a special report here about how AI will be weaponized against humanity. I'd like to play that special report. And following that, we'll go to the interview today with John Rubino. Would like to remind you that we are building the infrastructure of human freedom, and we need your support in order to do that, and we thank you for your support. We serve humanity, and we serve God. We serve Christ and God. And as you know, we are building the infrastructure of human freedom, and we serve humanity, and we serve the higher power, Christ and the Lord, not the bullcrap Satanism pretending to be Christ or pretending to be God. No, no, no. The way you know that we're serving the real creator is because we defend life. And we do it with your help. We do it through clean foods. We do it by building platforms for freedom of speech. And with this new non-satanic AI system that we're about to release. But we need your support. Shop at healthrangerstore.com. If you'd like to help support us, and we have storable food and laboratory-tested, certified organic, non-GMO nutritional supplements, personal care products, and so much more, all available at healthrangerstore.com. And to prepare yourself for the collapse of society, get yourself a satellite phone or a satellite text device. You can send and receive texts using satellites. You can text other people's phones. Even if your local cell towers don't work, just go to Satellite Phone Store, SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com to find out about their satellite phones and their satellite text messaging devices that can keep you informed and safe, even as society is collapsing around you. All right, with that said, here's a special report on how AI is being weaponized against you, followed by the interview with John Rubino. Enjoy. Here's how AI technology is going to be weaponized against you. Now, as background and a disclaimer, remember that I am working on an AI large language model project. You can read about it at brighteon.ai, and it's going to be a free downloadable large language model with special knowledge in areas of herbs and natural medicine, off-grid living, permaculture, things like that. So that's a positive use of the technology. But there are not very many positive uses of AI that I'm aware of. In fact, Elon Musk has just sued OpenAI, where he used to be a board member. But he sued them, accusing them of abandoning their original mission of, you know, doing good in the world. Sounds like Google, right? Like do no evil, and then they became evil. Well, now OpenAI is all about the money. And using AI to enslave people and letting the NSA and the CIA have total control over it. And of course, OpenAI is going to be, well, they're already censoring certain topics. Like you can't get OpenAI to talk to you about the stolen 2020 election, for example. And it won't say anything good about Trump. It won't say anything good about actually the good people. It will only say good things about bad people. So that's what OpenAI is right now. That's one weaponization of that technology. Now, you may or may not be aware that the vast majority of social media accounts that exist on X and other sites, mainstream sites, are bots.
And those bots have been programmed to generate comments. And by the way, Mossad runs a whole army of online bots. In case you're wondering who's got the most bots, it's actually Mossad. It's not even China, it's Mossad. So if you say anything negative about Israel online, then there's going to be a bunch of Mossad bots that come in, you know, sock puppet accounts, and they start hammering you and saying you're an anti-Semite just automatically. Oh, anti-Semite, you know? But those aren't real people. And those are bots that are using large language models. LLMs are very good at writing short comments or short summaries. They are exceptionally good. And you don't even need a high-end LLM. You don't even need a large language model, really. You can just have a small LLM, which is kind of funny because it's a contradiction, a small large language model. But when I say small, I mean like a 7 billion parameter model can do extraordinary things in terms of posting comments. And right now, like I said, X is dominated by bots. And that's one of the reasons why Elon Musk was trying to say that everybody should pay something like $1 a month or something, just to filter out all the bots. And I actually agree with that. I think everybody should pay a little bit more, not to earn money for Elon, but again, just to filter out the bots. So one of the things that AI is really good at is called sentiment classification. And it's also very good at transcription. Let me actually start with that. So there's an open source transcription engine out there that was initially released by OpenAI. It's called Whisper. And Whisper is very good even in its base state, but we found ways to make Whisper way better. And the way we run Whisper, that is our primary transcription engine, by the way. The way we run it, it's far more accurate than YouTube's existing transcription engine, which is really saying something, because YouTube has spent who knows how many hundreds of millions of dollars writing a transcription engine so that they can have subtitles or captions, you know, for hearing impaired, which is a good use of the technology. It's nice for the hearing impaired to be able to read, to follow along with a video. And we may do that on Brighteon.com, by the way. That's one of the things that we're looking at doing. Just do like an automatic transcription of everybody's videos and, you know, put it closed captioned up there. That's one of my goals. But currently we use it for our data pipeline for training our LLM. So we can take any kind of video content or documentaries or spoken content and we can transcribe it. And right now, I would say the transcription accuracy is far better than 99%. It's, I can't put a number on it exactly, but it's better than 99%. It really only makes mistakes on people's names, sometimes foreign words, of course, or when two people start talking over each other, then Whisper has a difficult time with that. But overall, Whisper does a really great job of transcription. Now, here's what a lot of people do not know, is that you can take a transcription that's created by Whisper, and you can feed it into an LLM. And you can actually give it a command or a request, what's called a query. And you can tell the LLM that, hey, this was a transcription from the spoken word and it may contain errors and please fix the transcription errors. And if words are missing, then fill in the missing words and things like that. And the LLM will do that. So you can take a transcription that's like 99% perfect, and you can make it 99.9% perfect by running one more pass through the LLM. That's just one of the little tricks of the trade. If you're involved in AI, you should keep this in mind. Another thing that LLM is really good at is, as I said earlier, it's sentiment classification. So I can take a transcription and I can feed it into an LLM and I can say something like, hey, check out this text and or analyze it. And give me a rating back from, let's say, minus 10 to plus 10 based on the sentiment that you find in this text, where minus 10 is very negative and plus 10 is very positive, just as a simple example. And you feed it the text and it will come back and it will give you, oh, that's like plus 4 or whatever. And there's lots of different ways using prompt engineering to fine tune this. But you can do more than just sentiment analysis based on positive versus negative.
you can use an LLM to give you a sentiment analysis on whether a piece of text is pro-Biden versus pro-Trump, let's say, or pro-Democrat versus pro-Republican, or, you know, pro-America versus anti-America, whatever. You pick the polarity here, you know, the two ends of the spectrum, and you can teach it that very easily, and it can begin to give you sentiment analysis based on whatever you want it to. And this has been running for many years, actually. So everything that you've ever posted on X or Facebook or any kind of public forum or Reddit or what have you has already been filtered through sentiment analysis with multiple dimensions, or you could say multiple questions. And it has already assigned a score to you about what is your sentiment of Republicans versus Democrats? What is your sentiment of the Biden administration? Are you pro-Israel or anti-Israel? Are you pro-Ukraine or anti-Ukraine? Are you pro-Russia, anti-Russia? I mean, anything. Are you pro-dollar? Or are you pro-gold? Are you pro-Bitcoin? Think about 1,000 parameters that could be scored to create a sentiment analysis of every individual to categorize their beliefs. It could include belief in God or religion or Christianity or Islam or whatever, or Satanism. But this is not difficult to do. If you monitor someone's speech, and the NSA does, and X does, and Google does, then you can quickly build a very powerful psychological profile of that individual and all of their belief systems. That profile is way more powerful and dangerous than what you might understand, because that profile can be used for pre-crime analysis. And this is exactly what is starting to happen in Canada with censorship. So not only will AI watch for people who are saying things that the government doesn't want you to say, I mean, that's easy. Oh, this person used the word tranny, or this person doesn't like transgenders. But they can also build a psychological profile of those individuals. And then, as Canada is doing, this is also happening in the EU, they can begin to score people for pre-crime. And there's actually the new law in Canada, and I forgot the name of it, it's some kind of censorship act, can require people to be arrested and imprisoned in their own homes under pre-crime rules, under the assumption that that person might commit a crime one day because of what they have said before. So speech gets turned into a psychological profile, and the psych profile gets weaponized against you in order to imprison you or to accuse you of pre-crime. And this can be used to silence you, this can be used to deny you a job, this can be used to, you know, anything, deny you a loan, deny you entrance into a college, deny you the right to travel, deny you the use of your credit cards, deny you a bank account, you name it, right? Canada's already weaponized bank accounts against the truckers. So we know exactly how this is going to be used. It's going to be used as a weapon against anybody who expresses dissent against the current tyrannical regime. And that's true in Canada, that's true in the US, New Zealand, Australia. It's going to happen all over the Western countries, the EU as well. AI is particularly good at this. Now, the other way that AI can be weaponized is that they can go back to the social media history of people who have been convicted of crimes, let's say mass shooters. You take a mass shooter and you scrape their entire social media history, you feed that into an LLM and you say, hey, this is the way a mass shooter talks about things. I want you to learn this pattern. And then you can say, I want you to go out to social media right now and I want you to flag as a red alert anybody who starts to exhibit these same kind of patterns as the mass shooter. Okay, again, pre-crime. Now, you could be accused easily of being a potential mass shooter or a potential insurrectionist because you might have patterns, you might have some of the same words as people who have been convicted of those things. You might be completely nonviolent you may have no intention of, you know, shooting up anybody, but you could be accused of it. And what's going to happen is that because the court system is overburdened right now, we're going to see a rapid shift towards AI judges and AI prosecutions. So in the not too distant future, an AI system will pronounce you to be guilty just based on what you've posted on social media. You are guilty of a thought crime. You are guilty of a pre-crime. The AI system will order you, you know, to be jailed or to be fined or to have your business taken away from you or whatever the case may be. And you won't be able to stop it. There's nothing you can do about it. And there won't even be a human in the loop, or maybe just a human rubber stamping all of it. Just some human judge sitting in a room, just clicking check boxes. Okay, approved, approved, approved. You know, that's probably what it's going to be like. The AI systems will determine that you're guilty. Now, one of the reasons this is so dangerous is because AI systems are being programmed to have anti-white racism bias. You've seen that with Google Gemini. It has erased all white people from history. And it will go to great lengths to not misgender a tranny. In fact, Google Gemini will say that it's better to have a nuclear war than to misgender Caitlyn Jenner, i.e. Bruce Jenner. You know, the man pretending to be a woman. So think about the misapplication of justice and laws pushing censorship. In the hands of AI court judges and prosecutors who are programmed to hate white people, but to protect transgenders at all costs. Think about that. That's the future that's coming very rapidly. You can see it. And that is why Google's AI system erasing white people, it's not a mistake. It's not a glitch. It is functioning exactly as intended. This is the purpose of Google, is to erase white people from history and to create biased, racist, anti-white AI systems as part of the takedown of white populations, followed by the takedown of all human beings, by the way. Google is, of course, fully on board with the depopulation agenda. And AI will be used to accelerate the depopulation of the world. Now, AI will also, of course, feed into augmented reality. And you have Apple Vision Pro, is that what it's called? When you put on the goggles, and then you're in an artificial world. But your world is augmented by scenery or signs or icons or symbols or soon complex characters that are driven by large language models. So characters will appear in your living room, let's say, when you put on the goggles. It will appear as if characters are in your living room, and they will speak to you in a way that seems totally human because it's going to be powered by a large language model. That LLM will, of course, be programmed to hate white people and to promote liberalism and fascism and communism. In fact, Google is already promoting communism through its Gemini engine. It says communism is good. You can't criticize communism. Communism is the future of the world and all this kind of stuff. That's what it says. So the characters that are powered by this are going to say the same thing. Many users of this technology, because they're so lonely and they're so incapable of social interaction with regular human beings, they will end up befriending these artificial characters in these artificial worlds. And some of them will become romantically involved with them. They will fall in love with their AI girlfriends. And you can imagine, once porn gets into the picture here, when you have, like, let's say you take a 20-year-old lonely male, and he's in his living room, and he's an incel, and he slaps on the goggles, all of a sudden, there's like 10 beautiful women willing to strip naked in front of him in his own living room. He's never going to leave that world, you know? He's going to be in that world forever. And then what happens when those 10 naked girlfriends start telling him, vote for Democrats, or take the jab, or turn in your neighbor if they have extra food, or, you know, remove Trump signs from people's yards, you know, all kinds of messages coming from the naked stripper girls, the porn, not even actresses, like fake AI generated porn stars in this young guy's living room. That's what AI is going to be doing. this technology will absolutely be used to enslave most people, and the weak-minded will be easily swept into its prison. Of course, we're releasing AI that helps to set you free and helps empower you with knowledge. Again, go to brighteon.ai, sign up with your email address there to be alerted, where you can download that, run it yourself. You can run it offline. It doesn't even run in the cloud, so we can't monitor you. But watch out for other AI systems, because they will be weaponized, they will be used to enslave you and deceive you. And you need to be at the top of your mental game in order to maintain your grasp of reality, frankly, as all this rolls out. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, brighteon.com, brighteon.ai, and brighteon.tv. Take care. Welcome to today's interview on brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and I'm thrilled to be joined by John Rubino, someone who I've really admired. I consider him to be an outstanding analyst of what's going on. He's the original founder of dollarcollapse.com, and now he's best known for rubino.substack.com, which is his Substack page. And given that we have some really fascinating inflation numbers that were just released, this is a perfect time to invite Mr. Rubino back to the show. Welcome, John. It's great to have you on today.
Hey, Mike. Great to talk to you again.
Oh, good to hear from you. Now, it's been, I don't know, a couple of months or whatever, but core inflation numbers don't tell the whole story. 0.4% month over month for January, according to official numbers. But it looks like this means the Fed will not pivot. So everybody that's factoring in lower inflation or lower interest rates is probably going to be disappointed. Is that how you read this as well? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, two big thoughts here. One generally is that you should never trust the headline number in a government economic report, because that's not where the real action is. Basically, for instance, employment is the big one. You know, they'll report a really good jobs number, and then later on, they'll either revise that number lower to the point where it would be a disappointment if they actually reported that number, or people dig into the report and say, oh, you know what? Actually, part-time jobs went up, but full-time jobs went down. And then they find all this other stuff that implies that it was actually a bad number, despite the good headline. Same thing with inflation. You know, they give you a completely acceptable number, and then people go in and look at how they arrived at that number, and they find all kinds of dirt there, you know. And in the case of our recent inflation numbers, the headlines haven't been bad, but when you dig a little deeper, you find things like the core services inflation measure is up at 8% a year or something like that, and that's why the Fed can't lower interest rates yet, because real inflation, rather than just the headline number they report, is actually much worse. So the general thought is, don't trust those numbers that they give you. Always look into the fine print. And the second point is that what we've got going on now in the stock market is not unique, but it would be unique if the Fed started cutting interest rates in the face of it, because we've got stocks just rocketing lately.
Yeah.
Pretty much every big index is near a record high. And a lot of these sub-indexes are much higher. And it's basically another tech bubble driven by artificial intelligence. In just the last year or so, this stuff came out of nowhere and gave us basically a new dot-com bubble, where anything with AI in its name suddenly attracts a ton of capital. And the big AI stocks are trading at valuations that rival, you know, Google and Amazon and America Online from back in 1999, you know, right before the crash. So I wouldn't trust this at all. But when the Fed looks at this, they can't have just a rocking, record high, wildly overvalued stock market and then start cutting interest rates, because that would just make the stock market overvaluation worse, give us an even bigger bust somewhere out there in the future. So the Fed's hands are kind of tied right now. So we're kind of in higher for longer, for a while at least. You know, it's going to be more months. And then, you know, you get into the fact that it's an election year and the Fed is under immense pressure from the incumbents in Washington to produce a robustly growing economy in time for the election. So they can't be, you know, they they can't be leaving interest rates where they are because interest rates at this level are liable to break a lot of things, which we can go into in a minute. But they can't really cut either. But you know where they're getting calls from the White House saying, you know what, if you want any future in Washington, D.C., you need to be cutting interest rates right now. So they're under pressure. And since they never really understood what it was they were doing to begin with, this must be doubly confusing for those poor guys. You know, bad models, incomprehensible economic theory, and now political pressure. So, you know, it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of guys. But you still can sympathize, I guess, with the place they found themselves in.
Well, I do want to ask you about the implications for commercial real estate and bank failures, because that now seems to be in the mix for 2024, but also the Fed's stance on interest rates as the Fed is wielding the dollar as a competition against the euro. I want to ask you about the euro implications of more expensive dollar loans. But real quick, before we get to both of those issues, about AI, I've been tracking the Nvidia bubble in the market. And I was talking about it months ago because, you know, we launched an AI project internally right after Thanksgiving last year. And when it became apparent to me that this is an interesting argument, I agree with your assessment that there's a major bubble and people just throwing money into this without understanding what it is. But at the same time, I have found that, you know, we have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on NVIDIA microchips in the last few months because we're building out an AI infrastructure ourselves. Because I've reached the conclusion, evidence-based conclusion here, that this AI technology that exists today, large language models, really is a game changer. And I believe that independent publishers that don't learn how to harness it are going to be obsolete in the next 1 to 2 years because of what I've seen and what we have with our own internal kind of early stage AI right now. So this is a case where, in my mind, something different from the dot-com boom, where the dot-com boom was just like, oh, eyeballs are all we need. We don't need to make any money. But NVIDIA actually makes microprocessors that build AI systems that enhance productivity of people. So I see like a reality-based value proposition. That, and I don't own any NVIDIA stock, by the way, just to be clear. I don't play the stock market at all. I'm too busy. But what do you think about that, John?
Well, I think AI is obviously real, and it's got nowhere to go but up. It's going to be this booming thing, basically, and until quantum computers come along, and then AI running on quantum computers makes humanity obsolete. You know, that's probably right, where this is going to go. But the internet was completely real back in during the dot-com bubble, so it wasn't like. What was happening wasn't a game changer. It's just that the valuations got way out of line and competition became very intense for every niche. Uh-huh. And I think that's one of the risks with AI is that every major computer company in the world has to start making these chips, right? And NVIDIA has a huge lead because they were making them before the bubble started blowing up. But there's no reason to think Intel and about 20 other computer or computer chip companies aren't going to be able to make AI chips. And that adds an element of uncertainty because, the big names in the beginning of a bubble tend not to be the companies that actually win in the end. So I think NVIDIA is highly likely to be one of the winners. But I think a lot will change as this thing really expands.
Yeah.
And I don't think the NASDAQ as a whole, NASDAQ is the index where all the tech stocks live. And I don't think NASDAQ's valuation should be as high as it is, even with this sector, AI, that's doing really well within. So I think shorting the NASDAQ rather than trying to short individual AI companies is probably the way you approach this if you want to try to make money right now. You know, instead of trying to ride the wave, you assume that a lot of other tech companies have been bid up along with this central bubble, and that they're wildly overvalued for whatever it is they do. And, you know, you've got a big short kind of scenario here at some point. The question is, what's the entry point? You know, where do you start shorting the NASDAQ?
Well, there's also a society-wide big short happening because AI replaces human workers, especially currently human white-collar workers. So, you know, we've seen this. The generative AI systems – can replace graphic designers. Or when I say replace, let me be clear. Let's say you're in a company and you have five graphic designers and you were thinking of hiring five more, but then AI comes along and you give these AI tools to your existing five graphic designers and you're like, wow, those five can do the work of 10. So now I no longer need to hire the other five. That's, I think, how this works. It's not like people are being fired because there's still a human element, or I guess in some cases it could be like a customer service, but for the most part, these AI tools are making existing people more productive, which means that a lot of companies don't have to hire new people for a lot of generative type of positions. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, the way automation works is that it eats a sector from below. In other words, it starts with the easiest stuff. And those people get replaced and laid off and everything. But there's still a lot of, you know, human value added work being done. And those guys aren't immediately affected. So the question with AI is, how far can it go? You know, are we going to reach a point where the New York Times doesn't need reporters anymore?
Because yes, AI we are. Can do yes. the work?
Yeah,
we're going to reach that in less than 18 months.
Yeah. And that's what's really scary, because then you're eating up whole sectors. You're not just eating the paralegals, but leaving the lawyers. You're basically replacing huge swaths of people out there. And this is uncharted territory. Factory automation was a big deal, but nothing like AI in the knowledge based world. So we'll just have to see where it goes. But I'll tell you what, if I had a couple of 14-year-old kids right now, I would be advising them to become plumbers or handymen or something like that. Things that you physically do in the moment that AI is not going to steal right away.
Right.
And I would tell them, don't become lawyers. You know, be careful about what you do in the medical field or the journalistic field, because those things, or computer programming. It used to be that, 2 years ago, not even way back when, but 2 years ago, you had job security if you could, if you knew two or three programming languages, right? And now you take a legal pad and you sketch out some parameters, hand it to an AI, and it creates your website for you. So a lot of the formerly untouchable parts of tech are at serious risk now.
Yeah, you're right. With Microsoft Copilot on GitHub, Copilot writes incredible code. I've used it myself in Python, and it's crazy. You just tell it what you want, and it writes code, copy and paste the code, and you're good to go. And, you know, we used to say learn to code, you know, that saying. Now, sure, you don't even have to learn to code. You just have to learn to describe your code. And then it writes the code for you.
Yeah. There's no way to overstate how big that is. Because this is just a huge transition that we're going through right now. And these AIs can teach themselves. So there's a takeoff point at which they leave their programmers behind and just start evolving at an accelerating rate. And that's the singularity, you know? And we're kind of looking at that right now, at least in prospect. It's not here yet. But and then you get into, what are these emerging intelligences going to think about the world? You know, you saw what happened with Google's AI just lately.
Right. All of history is people of color, apparently. There are no whites in history anymore.
They programmed a completely woke AI and unleashed it on the world. And I'd be really curious about what they were thinking, because there's only a few explanations for it. None of them are flattering to Google, right? They might have thought that it was great what their AI was doing.
Well, it was consistent with the philosophy of the Google managers, who are anti-white. And let's be honest, that system functioned exactly as programmed.
Yeah, but that means they weren't smart enough to read the room. You know, they did not know. They didn't understand the world in which they were unleashing that woke AI. They thought it was going to be received favorably.
but from what I'm told, Google engineers, they don't read the world. They think they are the world. They're so arrogant, the Google managers and project managers, they think they create the world. They shape the world.
Yes. Yeah. Well, it seems like that. I mean, they're in a little bubble where the only people they talk to are other people just like them.
That's right.
I mean, you know, I think everybody, all libertarians and conservatives have been out to dinner or something like that with somebody who just blurts out the most offensive kind of thing. And the reason for that is that they only talk to people with whom that's a completely normal thing to say. And I think the Google programming staff is that kind of a thing writ large. You know, there's 5,000 of them there, and they only talk to each other. But you know, they lost, what, $60 billion of market cap?
Yeah.
So this was a wake-up call for these guys, just like with Hollywood. I mean, Hollywood is losing his shirt right
That's
now
right.
because they hired people like that. And they made movies for each other, which nobody went to see. And the same thing happened with Google's Gemini AI. You know, it just got panned right away, and they had to take it off the market.
Yeah, yeah. Google's being described as the Bud Light of tech now,
yes,
which I think is really funny. But let's shift gears. Although I do want to mention, you know, AMD is probably next in line behind NVIDIA on AI microchips. Intel is behind the curve, but they make the general CPUs that power the systems that have the GPUs. So Intel is going to do well no matter what. But let's shift gears over to EVs, because I think EVs is another example of where we had government mandated policies that were trying to force a product solution onto a marketplace. And it has completely bombed at this point. Apple just canceled its plans for the EV. Volvo has shifted away from EV design and manufacturing. And all the other car companies that are making EVs are realizing they can't really sell them, and the dealers don't like them, and they're expensive to insure. The insurance companies don't want to insure them, and they're hard to repair. You know, what's not to like, right? And it takes hours to charge it.
Yeah, yeah. They turned out to be kind of a bust, very surprisingly, because Teslas are just so much fun to drive, you know, that I think anybody who drives one comes out of thinking, oh my God, I want this experience for the rest of my life. But then, you know, you have one of those cars for 2 years and their batteries start to wear out, and you find out you have to spend $40,000 to get a new battery pack, which with a, you know, an internal combustion car, $40,000 is 20 years of maintenance, if not more, you know? And so all of a sudden the used car prices for EVs are plunging, which is kind of tempting me. I'm thinking maybe it would be good to get an electric pickup truck at some really cut rate price, just
have it around the farm or something. Now.
Yes, yeah, exactly. but that's not a recipe for success if you want to sell your cars at full price when they're new, because if the difference between a new Tesla and a three-year-old one is like $50,000, clearly you're going to buy the three-year-old one and be able to put a new battery pack in it. But anyhow, yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb with EVs and say they still do have a future, but as driven by hydrogen fuel cells, because they don't have to be replaced, you know. And what you do is you have nuclear power running all day long, and at night when that power is not needed, you use that power to make hydrogen. You use the hydrogen to fuel cells, and that's the next generation of electric cars without a lot of the flaws in today's. And you know, that's a much cleaner process than having thousands of 10-year-old kids working in lithium mines and cobalt mines. and so I think it's defensible too. You can make a case work from environmental grounds. So I think we might look at today's EVs as sort of a growing pains first pass that didn't quite work, but that EVs still might survive and thrive somewhere in the future.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. I agree with your assessment, although of course the formulation of the hydrogen fuel cell tech is not well commercialized at scale yet, although it could be, but that sounds like a decade long project to do. But I love the fact that would release us from the ties to dirty lithium and cobalt mining, as you mentioned, especially in a lot of, let's say, not so politically stable countries where that's taking place. And also all the water usage that's used for lithium mining is destroying water resources in a lot of these countries, which is affecting food and farming. But if you think about the creation of hydrogen, let's say locally, let's say you have a unit in your garage that actually creates hydrogen. I don't know if they're cracking water or where they're getting the hydrogen from, but let's say you have a process that separates hydrogen, and then that can go into your car's hydrogen tank to power the fuel cells. That sounds all great, but you're still going to need energy to generate the hydrogen or to separate the hydrogen. You're going to need a hydrogen separator in your garage, and that's going to be powered by something, probably fossil fuels, you know, natural gas. Or what's your understanding of it?
Well, if you're in Arizona, you do that with solar panels on your roof. But that's a really expensive proposition right there if you have to have all the gear yourself. But again, if you go back to cheap mass-produced electricity, I mean, and there are places where you could do it with solar because there's so much extra sunlight
that
you can't use it all in the daytime. So you have this excess power that's essentially kind of sort of free. But I think that it has to be, in the end, probably nuclear with today's technology, because that's baseline power or baseload power that just runs forever.
Yeah.
And right. It runs all night long. And if you run it continuously, it's extremely cheap.
But are you talking about like micro nuclear power stations or just mainstream nuclear power plants?
I mean, whatever nuclear evolves into right now, it's these massive plants, these gigawatt plants. That's our technology. But the small modular reactors, if they come along and they run, say, a small town or a neighborhood or something like that, it's possible that they're cost effective for something like that, too. You know, we don't know where it's heading, but we do know that solar and wind won't do it at scale. You know, rooftop solar is a very cool idea because the real estate's already there. You don't have to take away any farmland or anything to generate power. But it's intermittent, so it's not ideal. So you need some other kind of a power source that just runs continuously. You could probably do it with natural gas. And coal, you do it with coal, but coal is incredibly dirty, and that's a very hard sell. Although it sounds like Germany's bought it. Germany's back to burning coal and cutting trees.
even just burning trees for heat. Let me bring up the website here for my producers. Westinghouse had announced the eVinci micro reactor. We covered this, I don't know, 6 months ago or something. And this micro reactor fits in the space of what you might call like a garage bay. Even this picture is a little large, but there's a micro reactor. And I remember that you have to swap out the fuel. Here it is. 8 or more full power years before refueling. So basically, you would get fuel rods from Westinghouse. It produces a certain number of megawatts ongoing continuously for 8 years, and then you have to swap out the fuel. Presumably, there would be a Westinghouse nuclear technician who would come and swap it out for you. Not like this technology exists right now. It's not for home use yet, but it's probably for military bases and high-end, you know, let's say national governments using it for off-grid type of applications. But this technology exists. So John, you're absolutely right. Why aren't we using this all over?
Well, after Fukushima, nuclear needed 10 more years before people got over that.
Right? Yeah.
And that's the big risk with nuclear is that every 15 years, some plant melts down somewhere, and then people are freaked out about radiation and stuff for such a long time that all the new plants get delayed and the existing ones get mothballed. So the huge risk hanging over nuclear is another Fukushima. And, you know, it's hard to say that won't happen, but it could be that if we become rational about energy and see the flaws of all the other energy sources, that we accept that risk and go forward with nuclear. And then there's a lot of innovation coming out there. Like you said, those small reactor designs are interesting. You know, they're not mass market yet, but a decade from now, they might be.
Yeah.
If you're hearing this, you want to invest in companies that make those things. It's still very bleeding edge. You just don't know who's going to be the one who makes them, whether it's Westinghouse or one of the 20 other companies that are bringing things like that to market. So it's a difficult investment thesis still.
Yes.
But it's something that's probably you never know for sure until something actually happens. But this looks doable. You know, it looks like something that a decade from now will be normal. And it'll change the world for the better. It'll give us a very consistent, very reliable energy source that can go pretty much anywhere. And I think that's a hugely positive thing if it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I was reminding people recently that U.S. aircraft carriers have 2 nuclear power plants on board, and that fuel lasts 25 years. because otherwise you'd have to dock every day and reload with diesel. You know, that doesn't work in a war, right? So that's why they're nuclear. Same thing with submarines and so on. But let's move over to commercial real estate because the implications of the Fed not pivoting, not plunging interest rates, those implications are enormous for the commercial real estate sector and how it has to, you know, refund or refinance its loans, right?
Yeah. So basically what happened in commercial real estate is that we had 10 years of extremely low interest rates and everybody put up office buildings and warehouses. You know, the warehouse thing was a boom because everybody assumed that e-commerce would create the need for infinite warehouses, right? Same thing with office buildings. And now a few things happened. One is we didn't really need that many warehouses. And during the pandemic, a lot of people found out that they really like working from home. And so not that many people went back to their offices. So a lot of office buildings are not full enough to generate the cash flow required to pay off their debts. So you're seeing a lot of these buildings have to be refinanced because their debt is coming due at much higher interest rates. But those interest rates make the buildings unprofitable. And so the buildings are being sold at massive discounts. And the big problem, you know, it could be just a small sector or a relatively small sector that blows up and doesn't cause any collateral damage. But all that paper is on the balance sheets of banks, insurance companies, and pension funds, especially local and regional banks. So as this gets going, you're going to have small banks have to report big real estate losses, which scares away their depositors, which forces the banks to sell even more of their depreciated assets in order to pay their depositors back, which means they have to report even bigger losses and so on until the whole sector implodes.
Right, right. Let me show this while you're talking, John.
Yeah.
From Bloomberg, office tower deal for $1 reveals anxiety among longtime buyers. I mean, they sold an office tower for $1. I assume the buyer had to, you know, take on some percentage of the outstanding debt, you know, to make the debt payments, I would imagine. But $1, you can buy an office building for $1?
Yes, you can. If you'll take on $90 million of debt process. Yeah. Yeah. And if you look at like San Francisco, okay, to take the real basket case example, they've got hundreds of billions of dollars of embedded losses in their office buildings because nobody wants to work in an office in downtown San Francisco.
That's anymore. For sure.
And so those losses have not been taken and publicized yet, but they will at some point. And so the end result of this is that the federal government's going to have to step in and bail out the small banks.
Yeah, that's my question. Isn't it mostly regional banks that have issued a lot of the commercial real estate loans?
Yeah, they've got like 60% of the paper. And the rest of it is spread around throughout the financial system. But each of those banks is small enough that 60%. Meanwhile, they've got this bad real estate debt. And they also bought a bunch of government bonds, these small banks, which they thought they were buying a totally risk-free asset. But in the last few years, when interest rates went up, when interest rates go up, that's the same thing as saying bond prices go down because they're a reciprocal of each other. So they have all these embedded losses in their government bond portfolios too, which at some point they might have to sell if deposit outflows reach a certain point, because they can't turn around necessarily and sell their real estate assets because they're illiquid. So they don't have to sell what's liquid, which is their government bonds. And they might have to take a 40% loss on long-term U.S. Treasury bonds.
Wow.
So these banks are in trouble. They know they're in trouble. Now here's where it spreads to the rest of the economy, because banks are big lenders to small businesses and other real estate ventures. But they're tightening their lending standards because they're so terrified about what's on their existing balance sheets. So if you're a small business, it's very hard to get a loan now, which is, you know, very recessionary, right? So we've got these good GDP numbers coming out, but under the surface, we've got all these small businesses that are being starved for capital, all these banks that are on the verge of imploding in a, you know, an industry-wide debacle, and a bunch of other entities out there that are, you know, they can't handle their current interest rates or won't do well in a slowing economy. You know, you've got all kinds of zombie companies out there that will fall when these other entities like the small banks and commercial real estate fall. So we're looking at the everything bubble blowing up in the next couple of years, and there's really no solution.
Okay. So the domino effect here, the ripple effect of the everything bubble is going to impact many different industries. But what do you suppose is going to happen with these physical office buildings? And let's suppose that the government bails out the banks so the banks can write off the paper losses, but there's still a concrete structure there. Many of them in these cities like San Francisco, where nobody wants to even walk around because the streets are covered with feces and needles. So what do you suppose is going to happen with all these buildings?
Oh, well, capitalism is great at recycling no longer clearly rightly valued assets, right? You just go bankrupt if you're the owner of the building. Somebody buys it out of bankruptcy at 1/4 the original cost. And all of a sudden, their costs are low enough that even if they're only 70% full, they still make positive cash flow. So basically, those buildings, they won't go away. They'll just be handed from their previous owners to new owners at much lower valuations. And then somebody out there has to eat those losses. See, that's the banking crisis. The process of these buildings being handed from one set of owners to another set, generating these big losses, which fall on the banks. So that's the process. The buildings won't go away. They'll be used usefully and productively sometime in the future, just with different owners who have way less skin in the game.
Well, I have a follow-up question on that. If I think society, the structure of work has changed permanently. People are not willing to go back to the office to work in very large numbers since COVID. And also many of the cities that host these buildings have degraded substantially and are too dangerous. There's so much violent crime now that it's hard for people to even physically go to work there without being accosted, let's say. So I don't see that these buildings will ever reach even, you know, 50% occupancy in the years ahead. I've seen some ideas of turning them into residential buildings, but that doesn't really work. You know, they're not set up with electrical and plumbing and security and so on for residential. Is there some other use of commercial buildings? Can they be turned into something else useful that you think might work?
I think people will be looking for ideas like that. And at a certain price, a lot of things that we're not thinking of right now will be viable. It's all about the price. I mean, if somebody gave you a skyscraper for $1,000, no debt attached to it or anything, you could probably find something to do with it that would make you $2,000 a year.
Haunted house. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think one thing that's already happening is governments are stashing illegal immigrants in empty office buildings and empty buildings in general. So I don't think that's a good long-term use, because I don't think we should have that many illegals here in the U.S., you know, to fill up skyscrapers in downtown. But
yeah, it sounds it looks like a dystopian sci-fi movie where you used to have a building full of American workers in tech. Now it's completely populated by illegals who, based on what they've done to the hotels in New York City, I would imagine they're crapping in the stairwells, you know, and they're base jumping off the roof. And it's just, you know, prostitutes and weapons trafficking and child trafficking and drug trafficking rampant throughout the building. I'm pretty sure we've seen movies like that before, and they were not good movies. I mean, they were horrifying depictions.
Well, yeah, you know, looking at the broader picture, we're killing our cities. And we really have to change policies, because it's, Mike, I don't know where you stand on the are the people running things morons or evil geniuses question.
I think it's a combination, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
But it sure looks like this is a plan. You know, open borders wouldn't happen unless the intention was basically to destroy a society from the bottom up. And that absolutely looks like that's the plan right now. And I know that sounds, you know, to a lot of your listeners, maybe it sounds kind of tinfoil hat crazy to say that that's our government is literally actively destroying civilization because of some broader plan. But why else would you do it?
No,
you
know, I think our audience already understands that.
Okay.
Actually, it's becoming irrefutable. When you look at the evidence, like, why would you keep the border wide open? You know, why would you keep printing so much money and sending it to other countries and not using it for home? You know, I mean, there are not good answers to this other than it's a plan.
Yeah. I mean, it at the same time, you know, the destruction of civilization is one avenue of the plan. And I think there are other avenues, which are the enrichment of big sectors of the aristocracy. You know, you look at what happens in our foreign policy. Why are we invading, you know, dozens of other countries and bombing everybody and inviting everybody else into NATO? It's because every one of those things involves upgrading of weaponry, which flows back into the arms makers, who then finance the campaigns of the politicians who send us off to war. You know, so that's an understandable thing.
Yes.
It's kind of a closed circuit where a handful of extremely rich people get even richer by doing horrible things in the world. And, you know, then you have to think, well, can there be that many sociopaths up there? And the answer is, oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's how they rise. Yeah. They become, they demonstrate their sociopathy, and then they get pushed up into positions of more power and influence.
Yeah. Exactly. Today's system filters for sociopaths.
Absolutely.
And lets them into the upper reaches. So it's the same thing with pharmaceuticals and the health system and with big food and the banks. You know, the banks do exactly the same thing. They destroy the financial system and get very rich in the process while impoverishing everybody else. So, you know, if what's happening in politics right now is a slow process of the peasants waking up to the fact that they're being harvested by an aristocracy. And it's getting very interesting right now, because you see populist politicians like in El Salvador and Venezuela winning, and Trump, you know, who would have thought Donald Trump would be seen as a savior by 47% of the population?
Yeah. Yep.
The reason for that is that we're cluing into the fact that there's an aristocracy running things to their benefit and to our detriment.
Well, let me bring this up. Mayor Eric Adams is now requesting, I'm going to search for this, that the laws be changed in New York to allow deportation of violent illegals because the sanctuary city status has made it impossible. So, I mean, here's an example.
The open borders thing.
Here it is, which New York Times.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's totally backfired on them, because basically they let in, what is it, 10 million people right now, with the assumption that it would mostly, that those illegals would stay mostly in the border states and some of them would filter up to swing states, but that they wouldn't go to the blue states. But then the red state governors started bussing all the illegals up to New York and San Francisco and Chicago. And so that's brought home the reality of open borders to the voters and to the politicians in these big northern cities. And they're freaking out. You know, they see their doom written on the wall, you know, because there's no way you get reelected if you're Eric Adams, right, in this world. You need to do something about it.
Well, it's wild, because I mean, this shows what happens when you have complete fiscal illiteracy among bureaucrats. So Eric Adams says months ago that New York City is going to collapse because of the burden of illegals. And then about a month ago, he says, hey, here's $50 million in debit cards we're going to hand out to illegals, some of them getting up to $10,000 each to spend on anything. It's like, whoa, you just created an incentive for more illegals to come in. And then this week he's like, hey, we have to change the sanctuary laws because we're being overrun by violent illegals and we can't deport them. It's like, do you not even look in the mirror, Eric Adams? How do you not see that you and people like you have created this problem?
Well, he's watching his worldview crumble right in front of him. And he really doesn't have any kind of a solution, because to do anything substantively to fix the problems that he's created would mean to join forces with people that he thinks are evil. So right now what's happening is we've got this, we've got some weird coalitions being built out there between Christian conservatives and big city liberals who both see the danger now of open borders. And so they're kind of voting the same way in some cases. They're voting for closed borders, basically. So that's, you know, all these weird bedfellows are starting to emerge out there. And basically it's populism. You know, these working class people on the left and working class people on the right are seeing that it's in their interest to back the same populist candidates and the same policies in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And they're swamping the country club conservative Republicans and the extreme progressives, because neither one of those guys gets close to a working majority now. And the big populist middle can do it, you know? So right. I think this is a huge, fascinating change. And it's also happening in the media. You're watching the legacy mainstream media shrink down to this little nub of what it used to be.
Oh, yeah.
And independent media like you and like Joe Rogan and Russell Brand and Matt Taibbi and Glenn Greenwald. I can go on for about 30 more names, because there are a lot of really successful people in the independent media space who are attracting audiences that dwarf CNN.
Oh, that's, so I mean, our audience dwarfs CNN. Yeah. We're not even that big.
No, and you look at Russell Brand, and then, you know, they try to destroy these guys. Like, they've actively tried to destroy Joe Rogan and Russell Brand, and they really want to get rid of Glenn Greenwald and Matt Taibbi, but they can't, because those guys, you know, once you've got 5 or 10 million people watching your Substack, or yeah, reading your Substack and watching your YouTube videos, you're kind of untouchable. You know, yeah. you've got to commit a major crime on camera. And even then it's like, oh no, that was created by AI. You know, you're really insulated from attacks from the mainstream media. So these guys have no power left. You know, MSNBC would love to be able to destroy Joe Rogan. They can't touch him. You know, he's 10 times as big as them. So that's interesting, because if media becomes populist and it basically just swamps the remaining corporate media, then what does the aristocracy do then? You know, what weapons do they have left? Well, it'll be interesting to see.
I'm actually glad you brought that up, because we know the answer. They're going to criminalize dissent. And so in the U.S., they call it, of course, misinformation. So if you question the establishment narrative, they say it's misinformation and that you're a threat to democracy. Okay. Now, with Israel, we've seen the same thing. If you question anything that Israel's doing, whether you agree or disagree, if you question it, well, that's anti-Semitism. And they're calling for that to be outlawed globally. You can't question Israel. In France, if you question the mRNA jabs, that's called an attack on medicine and science. And that's been criminalized already. Now, that's a criminal offense. So this is their answer, is to outlaw speech that they don't approve of.
Yeah, well, and add Canada to that, where I think they either are in the process of, or they just made it illegal to say nice things about fossil fuels.
Oh, yeah, right. Right. That's incredible.
It is incredible.
You can't say hydrocarbons have a lot of energy density. You go to jail. Yeah.
So in order to do that, they have to steal every major election going forward, right? Because you can't win 51% of the vote while you're censoring basically reasonable points of view from reasonable people.
Right.
So this is where the rubber really meets the road here, because, you know, they're willing to do pretty much anything to keep Trump out in the U.S.
Clearly.
And so, but at the same time, the Republicans are going to be watching this next election like hawks, because they realize that it's completely possible they got cheated last time. You know, I'm not saying that's definitively true, because I have no personal way of judging that, but a lot of people feel like the election was stolen, and they're motivated not to let it happen again.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to have, you know, it's going to be very difficult to cheat this time, and it's going to really be really contentious when a lot of accusations start flying back and forth. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Tucker Carlson now even says the 2020 election was completely stolen and rigged. Yes. It's become a mainstream talking point. Now, just in the interest of time, I appreciate you sticking with us here. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your Substack page, rubino.substack.com. We're bringing it up here. What can people learn from you on your Substack?
All right. It's basically a newsletter that starts from the kind of gloom and doomy premise that you and I have talked about here, and then asks, what can we do to prepare for it? So it's about actionable stuff. In other words, how do you change your finances to not just be protected from a gigantic currency crisis, but to make a lot of serious money when it happens? And how do you protect your career? How do you manage to be sure that you have enough food on hand? And how do you become as healthy as possible? Because the best prepping is good health, right? You know, if you're healthy, you're basically, you're partially immune to crazy stuff when it happens. And how should you be approaching firearms? You know, should you be looking at ways to defend yourself, and exactly how you do that, how do you do it if you haven't already? So all of those questions. And so far, so good. It's a 1-year-old newsletter that's developing a kind of a nice community there of people who are trying to answer these same questions. And so far, it's been a success, and it's been a real pleasure to publish.
Well, that's great. That's great, John. I mean, you had a lot of success already with dollarcollapse.com, and now with your Substack page, you're educating a lot of people and bringing them up to speed. This has been a great conversation, although I'm a little offended that you described our conversation as doom and gloom. I thought it was a really great idea to turn office buildings into like base jumping zombie haunted house experiences. if someone wants to give me an office tower, that's what I'll do with it. It'll be lots of fun.
You're doing exactly what I was talking about. You're finding a way to prepare for a horrible situation that is good for you. You know, so excellent.
No, it could be like a survival training camp for urban environments, right? You could set up like office tower, you know, zombie encounter training. Right there.
Oh, yeah, you know, you could have shooting ranges and things, and clear out a whole floor. Yeah, that could all work.
Just don't aim for the windows, because those bullets fly downrange, and who knows what happens.
Well, we buy bulletproof windows like they made on Elon Musk's trucks now.
Right. Trucks. To keep the bullets in.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's so much gunfire in this office building, we have to keep the bullets in.
Yeah.
Okay, John, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for spending time with us today.
Thanks, Mike. Enjoyed it.
All right. Take care. All right, everybody, that was John Rubino from Rubino, rubino.substack.com. Be sure to check out his Substack page and subscribe there if you'd like to learn about his practical solutions. I've known Rubino for many years, and his analysis has been spot on. Take his words seriously. He's not known to exaggeration or sensationalism. He just tells it like it is, and it is pretty bad. That's where we are right now in history. So get prepared. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon.com. Take care. We've got quite a few interesting items back in stock at healthrangerstore.com. And thanks to your support, we're able to keep investing in what I call the infrastructure of human freedom. So check out what we have here. We've got ginger latte. This is a kind of an instant drink powder, and it's incredibly delicious. The ingredients are really pure and clean. Also, of course, non-GMO, laboratory tested and certified organic. It's like an instant ginger latte drink mix. We also have tooth salt with neem back in stock. People love this because of what it does for their oral health. And yes, salt is actually very good to use in toothpaste for oral hygiene. You can find out all the details on our website, healthrangerstore.com. In addition, we have NAC back in stock. That's N-acetylcysteine. You've probably heard about NAC and all of its many benefits in our world today with all the crazy stuff going on. You definitely will benefit from things like NAC that are able to enhance your body's natural ability to detoxify and eliminate toxins from your body with lots of benefits for your health. So check it out at healthrangerstore.com. We've got many different solutions here, like instant red and yellow miso powders here. In addition, we have organic butter powder back in stock. That was a difficult one to get. Organic purple barley flakes, of course, high in natural anthocyanins. And, this is a lot of additional material about what people find in terms of benefits from shopping at healthrangerstore.com. Check out the categories here: personal care, supplements, healthy home. Yes, even cleaning supplies and fitness, garden and outdoor and so on. Different health interests, healthy brain, healthy liver, and so on, healthy immune system, food and beverages, including storable foods, and preparedness here, including our knife products. Let me bring those up and show you. If you just search for knife, you'll bring up our survival knives, which are co-designed with Dawson Knives, including Escape from LA, the Mass Ratio Bushcrafting Knife. These are extremely high-end, made out of MagnaCut alloy, which is corrosion-resistant with G10 handles. These are incredibly high-end knives. They'll last you a lifetime. So check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. Sadly, the macaroni and cheese is now sold out. If you're seeing this and you want to get some of that, too late. That is gone. People really love it, but we'll make more. It's just a couple months out. In the meantime, check out all the other categories, and you'll find lots of ways to enhance your preparedness, including freeze-dried storable fruits here, pineapple wedges, mango slices, strawberries, and so much more. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com. We appreciate your support. Every purchase not only helps enhance your own health and your own life, but also helps us continue to build platforms like Brighteon.com and other projects like our large language model project, where we are building the infrastructure of human freedom. Our goal is to help you be healthy, to be free, to have good cognitive function, good longevity, and to find joy, happiness, and purpose in your life. And we believe that good nutrition can play a key role in providing the neurological environment that makes those things possible. So thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.